So a doco, that's that piece of paper you get with the software that tells you all that it does, the stuff that you never read. But I know that it's okay. What I also do is training in Australia, and I like to speak at conferences and at local user groups. I occasionally visit the Netherlands, where I originally come from, and I also do training there every once in a while. What I'm going to talk to you about today is the roadmap, in a broad sense. I can give you a couple of dates, but you know how it is with open source projects. They are ready when they're ready. And since you can see them from the very first bit that gets produced, it's not a problem. We actually encourage you to try it from that very first bit because it makes for better software. We'll look at that in a bit when we look at the release system that we do use. So, you may have seen here the company name, MySQL AB. In Swedish, that would be MySQL AB, which stands for Aktiebolag. If you don't quite know how to pronounce that, do ask Linus, because he does speak Swedish, and he should be able to actually help you with that. I'm going to make everybody here safe, but that perhaps gets a bit silly. The AB is just simply Swedish for Proprietary Limited. It is that simple. I'm an employee of the Swedish company because we don't have an Australian branch of this company. So what do we have? We have a company. Yes, MySQL, there is a real company behind it. And we own the code, which I'll go to in a bit. There are rather a lot of MySQL users, about 4 million around the world, and there are about, what was the thing it says on the slide, about 36,000 or 35,000 downloads every day. Of course, that's not all new users. That's people upgrading. That's people who have wiped their system and are reinstalling. That's people who are trying a different version, downgrading even. They could be doing anything, but there's a lot of downloads there. We're a virtual company. We don't have fancy offices anywhere. There are offices in Uppsala, that is just north of Stockholm in Sweden. We have offices in Finland, Germany, the US, I think France is now one. None in Australia, like I said. And we are building that up slowly, depending on where our biggest markets are. And it generally, those offices contain salespeople, because we do sell stuff. But we generally work each from our own home. And the way my home looks is somewhat like that. So you could call that the Brisbane office. You see my desk. Yes, my hammock, anyway. It's very comfortable. And this is one of those reasons why this company rocks. There are very few companies that would allow me to use this as my office and actually tell it in public. I was actually dressed at that occasion. So that's... this works rather well. But I do like to go out. I mean, training and going to conferences is definitely my preference to working there. Even though, if I do have to do that kind of work, I'd rather do it there than in a stuffy building. I have to keep checking because I can't see there what I've got there. Our company is profitable. Would you believe it? Open source, and it actually makes money. Now, how do we make money? We've actually been doing this since 1995. I think the previous slide mentioned that. And we can make money because we own the software. This is rather unique for an open source project. Who owns Linux? Well, no one owns Linux, and everybody owns Linux. There's lots of bits from lots of people, and there's no single entity that can say, okay, we own that stuff, which is, in a way, very good for Linux. Now, you can make money with Linux, but only on the consulting level or building stuff on top of it. Now, that's what we do. Not only on top of Linux, the stuff also runs on Windows. We'll go into that in a bit. We employ pretty much all the developers in that deal with MySQL. There are, of course, community developers, and we respect them very much, and we get a lot of feedback back from them. This is very important for us. There is no company out there that can probably match internally what we can do with our community. We have pretty much a quality assurance department of 4 million users. Well, beat that. You can't possibly set up a lab that does it that well. And the example I always give, I've probably told some of you already at the conference, and I'll tell this one again. Yahoo Finance uses MySQL and lots of other bits of Yahoo, but never mind that. Jeremy Zawodny at Yahoo Finance, he runs, of course, replication. And some of his replication slaves, he runs FreeBSD, by the way, if you're interested. Some of his replication slaves run a version of MySQL that has been compiled by Jeremy himself straight from our BitKeeper tree. That's like our CVS system. So whatever we put in, he'll be running within a couple of hours, or maybe a day, whatever. Of course, that blows up sometimes. That doesn't matter, because it's replicated. It's just one slave, and of course, he's got plenty of setup there so that the other slaves take over. No user will actually notice. But it's excellent testing, and he provides us with feedback for that. So that means that MySQL on FreeBSD works very well thanks to him. He has a heavy load system, and we find funny bugs because of him on FreeBSD, as well as in the latest version of MySQL that no one else dares use yet. So that works rather well for us. Sorry, keeps blanking. Now, how do we actually make money? We sell licenses, and that's about 50% of how we make money. But you could say, it's GPL. What are you actually making money with? Well, there are plenty of companies out there that do proprietary stuff. By proprietary, I mean, perhaps it's the wrong term again, it's closed software. Cisco builds intrusion detection boxes, and you know iOS and all the other stuff that goes into their routers and other things. Anyway, basically their software is not open source. But they want to sell this box, and it has MySQL inside it. So it's an embedded system, it has MySQL. The application that uses MySQL is not open source. So what do? They need a way to not have that whole thing become GPL. That's just their wish. That's the way they make money, which is fine. So we say, okay, we own the stuff, so we can sell you a license. It's exactly the same software. It's just every bit of the code is the same. We're not selling anything different. But instead of GPL headers at the top, we have a copyright, blah, 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 MySQL AB, and this software is licensed to Cisco Systems in this case, and they get a nice end user license agreement with commercial warranty and some other stuff like that. So it's pretty much the same as a book publisher saying, okay, here we have books, put them in the bookstore, but we also sell them under a special price to students. It's a different market and different pricing in this case. And in our case, the pricing for GPL is zero, obviously, and the pricing for the commercial product is a couple of hundred dollars US. So it amounts to about $400 or $500 in Aussie dollars for single items. Of course, if you're going to ship thousands or tens of thousands, the price drops dramatically. That's what the salespeople would be negotiating with you, of course. What else do we make money with? We make money with, let's hope this works now. Yes, training and consulting. So that's one of the things I do in Australia, not consulting. I really don't like that kind of stuff. I'm not that expert, but I do training. I know enough for that. That makes about 25% of our income, and support also makes 25% of our income. Of course, other companies can provide support as well. Not a problem. There are plenty of experts out there. We just happen to have a number of developers, and we can provide, and for instance, Earthlink, a very big internet provider in the US, has a 24/7, 30-minute telephone support contract with us. Of course, that makes us lots of money every year. It's a contract. It's a yearly contract. And they are kept very happy, because if they're something goes wrong on one of their systems, they can call us in emergencies, and they will be called back within the 30 minutes. I think this happened once a number of months ago, and they were called back within around 20 minutes. So the system actually works. So again, this is, I think, a rather unique example of how, first of all, of an open source company that makes money, and secondary, of how an open source company can actually really make money. We're not rich, but we're growing, and it's growing steadily. So that's how we can actually fund our development and come to conferences like this. For me, this is business, but of course, I'm having a lot of fun as well. Yes, at the bottom here, you see a lot of things that don't cost money, and that's also very important. Bugs.mysql.com is the public bug system. If you think there might be a problem in MySQL, have a look there. Maybe it's already been reported. If it hasn't been reported yet, please put it in there. So you see, you're not, if you think there's a problem and you tell someone at MySQL, it doesn't end up in a black hole and you never know what's going to happen to it. It should end up there. That's the system where it should go, and you can put it in yourself. You just have to log on with your name, and that's about it. You don't need to do anything else. Someone will look at the problem and open the issue and set it to verify it, if they can actually reproduce the issue. So it's very important, if you can, to submit reproducible problems. That could be a specific configuration setup, that could be a set of SQL commands with a bit of data that blows the thing up. It is possible, so that's the kind of stuff you would want to look at. The mailing lists, of course, are very useful. Then there's that documentation thing that no one reads. There is a useful aspect to it as well. First of all, you can search it, and the search engine inside the documentation system works rather effectively. If you type in select in the search box, it actually gives you the specific sections in the manual that are related to the select statement. And that works for most keywords. If you find a keyword that is very obvious to you, sometimes things are called slightly different from what they're called in SQL. So you have to realize that, and not always does the indexing work that way. If you have a keyword that doesn't actually come up with any decent page, do let me know and I'll make sure it actually gets added. It also has a comment system. If you think you've got a good hint that relates to a particular section, please do add it there. That's always good stuff. We have IRC channels, and the one I personally like best is the one on Freenode called MySQL. I hang out there, and quite a lot of other colleagues of mine hang out there. Trainers, as well as a couple of developers and support people. As well as a lot of community people, of course, who are very expert. One of the key members in that channel was actually recently hired by us because he was so good. He's now one of our support people. That's the way it works. So if you want to get hired by the company, that's a good place. That's really good. Last but definitely not least, books. I don't remember which language it is, but that's one of the MySQL books that's out there. They've been translated in heaps of languages. They're even not necessarily translated, but completely written from scratch. There are books in Japan that are nowhere else on the planet, written by Japanese people about MySQL. That's excellent. If you walk into a bookstore, quite often there are more MySQL books than Oracle books, which I think is perfect. Really. And we don't do a thing. We are not actually in the business of book publishing. We might be, but in the very near future, but we're not right now. And so all those people out there, and publishers as well as individuals taking that initiative, have just taken that initiative and have started writing books. One of those people is down there. He's a colleague of mine, Luke Welling, and he has written MySQL books as well as MySQL and PHP books. Now, if you don't run out after this session finishes straight away, we have a couple of books that we'd like to hand out to you. Not enough for everybody, so I'll play a little quiz, but we'll do that at the end. How many have you got? Okay. Total?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to grab one of these if you can keep it separate. That'll do. Okay. We have some books called MySQL Tutorial by Luke Welling and Laura Thompson. And then there's the second edition, I believe, of... I'll show them. Goodness. There they are. And of course, you can get them signed by at least one of the authors. PHP and MySQL Web Development, that's the other one. So, if you're using PHP, that would be a good one. And if you, particularly if you're just starting off with MySQL, but perhaps also if you're slightly more experienced, you might want to look at the MySQL tutorial. So that's a nice little freebie. I didn't even know that was going to happen, but apparently, yeah, Luke has seen fit to drag that whole box along from Melbourne, so that's very good. SAP. Who here has heard about our deal with SAP? Okay, a few people. It's been all over the news, but I tend to not read that either. What we have done, or what SAP has done, is sign a deal with us. And it's a technology partnership deal. Of course, we're small fries and they are huge, but that doesn't make it less important. What they have done over the last few years is they acquired a database, Adabas D, and turned it into SAP DB. Then in, I think it was 2000, they open sourced it. They published it under the GPL. Now this is in what we call enterprise-grade database. It'll actually run underneath SAP R3, one of those massive application suites, and on that level it can compete with Oracle and the other big ones. It can do stuff that MySQL, our current server, doesn't do. SAP has had problems actually building a community. There's not enough of a community that they were able to get together. Now, one thing that MySQL AB does know is how to build a community. Or rather, we have been lucky that a community has been gathering around us. So apparently we've done something right. We've got those millions of users. So what SAP wanted, and still wants, is to leverage that community and get more involvement in not necessarily SAP DB, but making databases a commodity product. And why would that be? They want to sell their applications. Now, if their customers need to buy Oracle, that is a bit of a problem, because Oracle costs a lot of money, and then you still need to buy SAP stuff. There might not be enough money left. So they'd rather that you use free software for the database or something that is really, really cheap, and then maybe buy support for that on a contract basis, and then run their software on top of it. They really, really want databases to become a commodity. They are becoming a commodity anyway, but they'd like to help it along. So that's the reason for this partnership. Now, people have asked us, okay, so now you have two databases. You've got SAP DB, which is actually called MaxDB by MySQL, to make it really, really simple. It's one of the most terrible names we've ever come up with. It's not good for marketing. Anyway, so we've now got an enterprise database and MySQL, which actually does about 95% of applications out there could use MySQL. They would run quite nicely. So we've got these two. Now, are we going to stick those together? Not bloody likely. It will not run because, as I understand it, SAP DB needs its own build environment, and it's rather big. And it is also written partially in a dialect of Pascal. What can I say? And MySQL, of course, is written in C, C++, and a tiny bit of assembler, depending on what platform you look at. You don't even need any assembler. So, no, those are fundamentally incompatible. But what we have got is a lot of expertise on the SAP side. They've done a lot of stuff with databases. The chief architect of AWS D is actually part of SAP. He runs the show there at SAP DB. So we are working together. And one of the goals we have, and I'm actually skipping ahead on the future here of our roadmap, one of the things we will do is run SAP R3, that whole application stuff, on top of MySQL, the current server. Will that happen next week? No. We might have an extremely, extremely unstable first version 0-1 pre-alpha working around mid this year. There's someone working on it. There's a whole interface layer that we need to build, which also has been built for Oracle and the other systems. The whole interface layer needs to be built. Of course, SAP has procedures and specifications for this, so we're just working along with them to build the whole specification thing, or build our interface layer to the specifications. There's a test suite for that, not a problem. So we can easily test that, whether pretty much each tiny little bit of functionality that SAP R3 requires is supported in MySQL. It's a very easy test system. You either do it or you don't. And then there are benchmark requirements. You wouldn't believe it, but SAP R3 actually has speed requirements. And we have to come up to a certain level of speed on each individual operation to be, in the end, SAP certified. So that's one of our aims for the slightly longer term. Like I said, we might have an unstable version sometime this year, but it'll take a couple of years for us to actually get there properly. Now, that does mean adding things that we haven't added yet. I believe they need triggers. We don't have triggers, but we'll be working on the triggers. Now, something, interestingly, that they don't need is foreign keys. SAP R3 does not use foreign keys. But we have them already anyway, so that's not an issue really. Anyway, that's what we're doing with SAP. It's a nice partnership because we do get extra expertise from them. And of course, the logo looks really funky because people recognize it. Our release schedule, how does this work? Where am I in my slides? Okay. We run things through alpha, beta, gamma, release. You might be able to compare some of our alpha releases to release candidates of commercial software. It has already been run through our standard test suite, which contains a test of each individual function and functionality in MySQL, as far as it's possible to test, and each bug that we've ever found and had a fix for. And of course, bugs that we haven't found a fix for are either documented or will be fixed. So we can't reintroduce old bugs, and new software is actually pretty well tested already when we first put it out. There could still be bugs, of course. There are always new bugs because there can always be new code. And alpha versions are the versions where we produce a lot of new code. 4.1, that's currently out in alpha, has subqueries. And subqueries are, of course, one of those new things. Lots of things needed to be changed in actually the core engine. So there's a lot of new code, so we have had a lot of bug reports, which is fine. That's what the alpha status is for. Then we stop adding new features, and we call it beta, feature freeze. And we keep fixing bug reports as they come in. When we see that no critical bug reports come in for a while, we name our releases gamma. And this is basically a staging house. It could be only a couple of weeks between gamma and stable. We just see, okay, are we really sure that this is kind of stable from that gamma thing? Are there really no nasty bugs popping up here? And then we can call something stable. The release cycle for this should be about 6 months. It isn't currently. We're trying to work our way towards that. Now, we have the funny situation at the moment where we actually have 4 development trees out there. This is not as it usually should be. It should be 3. We've just gone ahead of ourselves a bit because we wanted people to play with our stored procedures in version 5. 3.23, old stuff. If you're still running 3.23 or older, that's fine. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But do realize there is a kind of end-of-life thing. There are bugs that we cannot fix in 3.23 because some of the architecture of some components are different. So there are bugs that we might be able to fix in version 4, but not in 3.23. Or we might not be able to fix them because it could potentially break something else. And since it's a stable version, we don't want to do that. Only little fixes. But there are fixes, like security problems that have been found, have been fixed in 3.23, of course. That is very important for all those production systems out there. The current production system is version 4.0. How many of you here run version 4.0? That's a whole lot. I'm very happy about that. Any 3.23 still? That's a whole lot still. 3.22s? Okay. version 4 I've already done, 4.1. Pretty good, we're getting there. Any version 5? Okay. Oh, you're the sole the sole hand sticker upper. Okay, we very much hope that people will start trying our version 4.1 and 5 very soon. And just to give you an idea of why we would like that, there are a lot of features that have been added and some changes have been made. And it will probably be much easier on you as well as your systems if you do the major steps and don't skip one. If you go straight from 3.23 to version 4.1 or version 5, you will run into a lot of things at the same time, just new things to get accustomed to. So it might just benefit you to not do it in that large a step. We'll look at the specific 4.1 and 5.0 versions in detail in a moment. This is just buzzword bingo. I'm not going to go into this in great detail. Do we have transactions? Oh yes, and this is old news. This is 3 years ago that we stuck them in version 3.23, actually. They were there. Of course, this is our own bloody fault for saying a long time ago, oh, you don't need transactions. Quite often, you don't. We just were a bit, this is Monty writing, of course, our CTO. We were a bit too adamant about it. So the phrasing in our manual was so serious that everybody's picked up on that. Oh, MySQL doesn't do transactions. Well, it has had it for years now, and people still don't believe it. So really, MySQL has transactions. Who here thought that MySQL didn't have transactions? One, two, three. Well, there you go. It's still out there, and quite frankly, it's our own fault. Is there? Yeah, sure. And feel free to talk to me about which bit doesn't work properly. Yes. Okay, so what do we have there? We have a lot of APIs, ODBC, JDBC, we have a .NET, we have a native .NET provider even. Versions, ACID, transactions. Pretty much everything that Oracle does in that sense, we do as well. Full text indexing, full foreign key constraints, point-in-time recovery, replication, user-defined functions, it's all there. And all these things, I believe, yes, all these things are actually already present in 3.23. It's nothing new. So this is just a buzzword bingo you can give to your manager if he's doing a feature comparison on the basic stuff. One of the key features of MySQL is storage engines. You can have different ways of storing your tables, and you can choose per table how you want to store it. And the easiest example is probably, do you want it on disk, or would you like to keep it in memory, all in memory? If you want to keep it all in memory, there are so-called heap tables. They'll be renamed, I believe, to memory tables, but that's the basic idea. The defaults that you're probably all using are my ISOM tables. They are non-transactional. This means less overhead. And then there are InnoDB tables, and they do this. They do all that transactional stuff as well as the foreign keys. They do that fairly advanced. They use an Oracle-style data table space. They have nested transactions with save points. You can have multiple table spaces. You can split things in different files over different partitions. You can store your stuff on an unformatted raw disk partition. That's not a problem either, so it doesn't even have to be a Linux partition or a Windows partition or anything like that. It does something fancy called next key locking. Who here knows what phantoms are and has dealt with them in some form or another? No votes here. Oh, one. Thank you very much. I won't go into that much, but it basically means that in some instances, even Oracle can give you during a transaction a result that shouldn't have been there given the isolation levels in your transaction. Next key locking means that you don't have that. So it's prettier than Oracle in that sense. That's not surprising since that engine was built 15 years after Oracle started writing their engine. So it's just the next step. We have the advantage of being slightly newer. We have foreign keys with cascading deletion updates. Replication. Who here uses replication in MySQL or wants to use replication in MySQL? Okay, quite a few votes on the wanting at least. It is very easy to set up. We set it up in, how many minutes was it in Melbourne? 15, 20? Yeah, pretty much. That's what we do in a training course. We set it up on Thursday afternoon and it takes about 15, 20 minutes. I sit back in my chair and don't do anything. And well, I say to one person, you're the master. You have to set it up as a master system and the rest does the slave system. And they sort out the rest themselves. I make sure they have static IP addresses, but that's about it. There's a lot of setup possible. You have to realize it is asynchronous replication. That means that there is a slight delay from when you commit on the master to when things show up on the slave. But this is very effective for websites. Websites do mostly selects, and you can run them off slave. So this is a couple of pretty pictures of how you can set it up, and you can combine the different ones, and there are quite a lot of possibilities. We are working on expanding this into what we call multi-master replication, fail-safe, automatic failover, basically, so that if a master goes down, the other systems negotiate amongst each other which one is the most up-to-date, becomes the master, and they all reset themselves automatically. You could currently monitor that with a script, what's going on, the status of the different systems, and make the script do the reconfiguring, but we're putting that inside the server itself. Subqueries. This, my dear people, is a working subquery, not a problem. It's all there. So the not in exists. Row subqueries where you can compare multiple columns to another query. You can stick a union in there. You can stick a subquery in the from clause. You can refer to columns from outside the subquery inside the subquery. That's called correlated subqueries. Pretty much, we might have at this point left out one or two things that are at the bottom of the page, but at the bottom of the page in the specification, not here, but pretty much all of what SQL 99 standard says about subqueries is in MySQL and it works. It's there. So if anybody asks you, does MySQL support subqueries? Oh yes, definitely. This is version 4.1 and they do rather well. So that's that one. GIS. Who has played with the GIS functions in version 4.1? Anyone? Okay. You can put geometric objects in MySQL, and you would generally use this for mapping. And mapping is rather popular these days, so those are interesting features. I'll skip over that. Character sets. We used to have character sets in MySQL anyway, but it was global. Now you can select them down to the column level. You can have each individual column in your database, and this gets really, really, really confusing and terrible. Each individual column in the database can have a different character set. This does make sense, because if you have a website that is multilingual, you might need this. We may not, but there are a lot of people out there who do. And the Japanese, on their own, already have three different character sets they need to cope with. So they need to have these. So you have character sets, Unicode, and collation, which specifies how things are sorted. And within a single character set, you can have multiple different ways of sorting it. The Swedes and the Germans order their phone book in a different way, with the funny accents. One makes them end up at the end, and the other makes them end up near the letters where they originally belong. It's curious stuff. So that's character sets. What did I do there? Something funny. Prepared statement. Who here has already played with version 4.1 and prepared statement? Okay. Considering the low number of 4.1 people, that's understandable. You can now prepare a statement. That means that you send the whole query to the server, but it's not complete. You may have left out some variables that you want to fill in later. You get back a handle. So the server parses it and stores it on the server side in the regular execution structure, basically. It's not yet fully optimized, but it's getting there. Sends back a handle. Then you can bind your parameters to basically the question marks, and there are question marks in your query, and execute the statement, and execute the statement again, and again, and again. But it only gets parsed once, which is really nifty. Now, if you need to stick a large text field or a blob into your database, this is also very useful, because with this parameter binding, you no longer need to escape that blob field. You get the statement prepared, and then you bind that blob field to the proper spot in the query, and it gets transmitted in a binary format. So it's much faster and much more convenient for your application. A similar trick happens when you retrieve the information. You can do, what's it called here, the bind buffers. When you retrieve your result, you can also bind your results. So it's very useful. Another thing that version 4.1 adds with this new client-server protocol is multiple result sets. You can send a query, or basically multiple queries, select something, semicolon, select something else, or update, or whatever, and it will do all of these and send you multiple result sets. That's all possible. Stored procedures. They're here. They're working. They're right there. And if you download version 5 from mysql.com, you'll have them too, and there are binaries online. They've been made available just before Christmas. And this is an example. And there's some fancy stuff in there. We've got cursors. They're all there. They're, at the moment, only there inside stored procedures. But they are there. So that's very useful. This is only a very limited sample of what can actually be done with stored procedures. There's a new chapter in the manual, I believe chapter 17, but just look online and scan the list. There's a whole new chapter I put in a couple of weeks ago, which basically explains each individual statement. There are ifs, there are do-while loops, there are lots of funky little things. There's something called a handler up there. Certain conditions during the execution of a statement can trigger a handler, a kind of little trigger that does a certain statement. It could be a select statement, could be an update statement, but you can also set a variable. You can have stored procedures, and you can have stored functions. Function returns a value, and a procedure is something you execute with a call statement. So call, and then the name of the procedure. Next Tuesday, this latches on to Linus's idea of conquering the world. It always happens next Tuesday. What are we going to do? Well, a lot more stuff. Pretty much anything out there that makes sense, we are implementing. A colleague of mine, Sanja Belkin, who is responsible for implementing the subqueries, he's pretty much done with that now, but he'll, of course, keep an eye on the bugs. He's currently implementing views. It's still somewhat in the design phase, but we're trying to do a very serious job with this and actually get them right. And that means that views that should be updatable will actually be updatable. So again, we're actually not trying to beat Oracle necessarily, but I'll answer the questions afterwards. We're trying to make it as good as possible in implementation and not just go for the easy road. And that's why sometimes we take a long time to actually implement things. There have been a couple of community contributions for views, but they were fairly patchy. One of those, we can improve it next week. That won't be good enough in this case, because it seriously affects the core engine, and we need to get them right. Okay. We have clustering technology. Yes, we do. We acquired a company called Alzato late last year, which is a spin-off of Ericsson Business Innovation. So that's one of those things that a commercial company like ours can actually do. We acquired this technology. We are releasing it under GPL, of course. All our software is. It does clustering, very pure and simple. It will split the contents of tables even across multiple systems. So they're fragmented, which means that there's faster retrieval. If you do a query, you get part of your result from one machine and another part of the result from another machine. And of course, everything is duplicated across multiple machines. You can rip out a machine and the thing still keeps running. This is telecom grade stuff. It was designed for Ericsson. That's what they use it for. And we are plugging that in as a storage engine into MySQL. That sounds simple, but it's actually quite a lot of work. And you see up there a phrase called broker. We're building extra stuff, so even the MySQL server part is redundant. Because if you're talking to a single server and that server fails, you're still stuffed. So you have to talk to the broker, which will talk to a server. Broker is more of a concept. You can talk to multiple brokers and all that. So there's no single point of failure here. So yes, we have clustering technology. We do not intend to spend our time with grid computing or anything of the sort. So if you're wondering about that, that's not our thing. But pretty much anything else that is currently actually useful in database land, we are or will be involved in. Standard and error handling is already being dealt with in MySQL. Version 4.1 and 5 will actually produce SQL state result codes. So that's standard error handling. We are working, like I mentioned, on triggers. Pretty much anything. I could do a long list, but I won't bother you with that right now. This is top secret. But I have... Yes, you're not allowed to see this. I'll have to kill you all now. No, it's not that bad. It's funky stuff. There are new graphical tools we are working on. We're launching them, I believe, next week at Linux World in the US. So this is a sneak preview. I don't have a working copy of anything here, but that's about it. What it will do, well, see here you see a nice picture of replication setup. You can actually see which slave connects to which master and how the current setup is. And because of that automatic failover, that configuration could change. So it's quite interesting to actually get an overview of that. So currently, you'd need to do quite a lot of legwork yourself to get that kind of overview. You'll be able to start and stop your servers. You'll be able to manage your users on multiple systems with extra information about those users. See who's connected. See basically the health of your server on a nice graph. See how much memory it has been using over the last day, what the peak memory use was, how many connections there have been, what the peak connection rate was, that kind of stuff. Anything you would wish for in a GUI is there. We are also working, this is the administrator tool. What? We are aiming towards version 5, but parts of it will also work with 4.0 and 4.1. But since version 5 is now out, we aim to have that stable, well, around somewhere between July and September. That's the idea if we're going on our current track. So aim for 5, and that's another reason you will want to upgrade. There are just things we can't do in version 4 to make this all happen. We'll also be working on what we call a query analyzer. So building tables graphically, graphical table design. So drag and drop basically creates relations between tables and build queries and analyze how they actually execute. Yes? Yes, definitely. Yeah. Like I said, all our software is GPL, really. You can keep asking it, the answer will be yes. Yes. We're just still stuffing around with them now, so there's no sense in actually, yeah. But so currently we have pretty pictures. This is just a marketing gimmick, of course, but business. But yeah, once we actually have code, you will see it. Okay, thank you very much all. Any questions? Yes. Yes. Well, it supports the OpenGIS Consortium Simple SQL specification. Not all of it, but a serious part of it. It is a partial implementation. We don't do 3D objects, I believe, at this point. But you generally don't have to for mapping, because you layer 2D maps on top of each other. You have a street and you put some plumbing in it, and you run a car over it and you put a lamppost in there. So you can do that quite nicely with the 2D stuff. We'd like to get more people to use this and complain heavily about how it doesn't work, and then maybe help us improve and further develop it. It is open. It is the OpenGS specification, so we actually went straight for the standard and implemented it that way. It's not a deviation of anything. You'll find that most new features we are implementing, we're going straight for SQL 2003. So the stored procedures, I forgot to mention that, are SQL 2003 standard. What deviant dialect are we using? Well, the standard. DB2 uses it as well, so if you have a stored procedure in DB2, it'll now run straight on MySQL, just accidentally. We are planning an alpha release this month, and it'll be built on top of, I think it's version 5, again, for practical reasons. Otherwise, we're stuffing around with versions that are going stable soon, so that's not good. But we'll be releasing basically an alpha version of that, plugging into 5 soon. And we're still working on lots of modules and administration issues and stuff like that, but it's happening very soon. So we didn't only buy the technology, we bought the entire company. So we got around 8 or 9 developers, and they just kept on working basically, but now towards the goal where we want them to go. So all these developers have been working on getting NDB cluster into MySQL. So we acquired the resources as well as the intellectual funky stuff. Yes? Will views have triggers? I see no reason why not. Should they, according to the spec? A view is, you can see that. Lots of people call a view like a virtual table. I call a view a macro. A macro that should rewrite a query, and there's no reason why there shouldn't be a trigger on them. Yep. Your neighbor. More tricky. Next step. Views will be version 5.1, which we should be releasing around July, August in alpha. So we should be getting towards that. And everything has to be done in stages. We have to start somewhere. Materialized views. Well, once we have triggers, that'll be quite easy to set up. Just through SQL and some stored procedures and stuff like that. But building it in, why not in due course, we can also do that. Yes? OpenGS, I'll talk to you after this. Yes? Have you read the spec? We're working towards it, but as you know, it's a moving target, because last year we were working towards SQL 99 basically, and then they came out with the 2003 thing, so we have to. There's stuff in there that you really don't want to see. And we'd like to keep you safe from that kind of nonsense. But there's some really good stuff in there that we would like to give you. But there are things that are really not important for the real world. Like I said, MySQL already runs 95, could run 95% of the applications out there. Now, the other 5%, a large chunk of that, we're happy to leave with Oracle, IBM, Microsoft even. That's fine. We don't want the entire market. So some of those, call them highly quirky features, very specialized, we need to see market demand for that. a couple of either big companies or a lot of companies that really need that stuff, and then we'll look at them. Depending, of course, how destructive it would be for the rest of the server. It's always a practicality thing. We try to keep things. Any new feature must not. This is an absolute requirement. Must not slow down existing features. So if you don't use it, it mustn't slow down everything else. So if you don't use subqueries, it won't worry you because you know you can upgrade and not be worried about speed. This is very important. It's one of those fundamental design issues in MySQL, and that's why we take forever to implement everything. We need to get it right. Yes. Thank you very much. Do talk to me. I'm still here until tomorrow afternoon. So, thank you.